to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly coming to you once again from the Vivid Seats studio. And guys, it's back to racing this weekend, and I have to be completely honest. It has been a crazy couple of weeks, and it's only been a week since I did the last podcast, but still, it's been so crazy with work, and the kids are back at school and all those sorts of things that this past week has been a complete blur. So I had to sit down over the past couple of days to catch up on all the news and all the latest goings on in Formula One. So looking forward to getting back to racing this weekend in Singapore. But before we do that, I've got a message from show sponsor MyBookie, and they have a special going on for everybody that listens to the show here on the Overtime Media Network. And for any new users on MyBookie.ag, you can double your initial deposit by using our special promo code Overtime. And once again, that's for all new users on MyBookie.ag. Double your initial deposit by using our special promo code Overtime. Okay. Like I said, we are back to racing this weekend for the Singapore Grand Prix. And full disclosure here, guys, I'll be completely 100% transparent and clear here. I was not a big fan of night races when Formula One decided to introduce that format a number of years ago. I was kind of skeptical. I thought it wouldn't be cool. I thought it was maybe copying some other series like NASCAR and things like that. But I have to admit that I've completely flipped my stance 180 degrees. And I really look forward to all the night races that we have. And we've got several of them on the calendar nowadays in Formula One. And Singapore, I really enjoy watching this race. It's physically very demanding for the drivers. It's a long race. And it's always very hot and humid in Singapore, and it's always good from that point of view. And it can be unpredictable as well. So I'm certainly looking forward to getting that going. And it's like I say, it's been a weird week. I really felt like I hadn't done anything on the podcast since the last Grand Prix, and it was a bit of a shock to the system that it's only been a week since the last episode dropped. So I really need to strap in and get back to it because I miss Formula One when it's not around. And really looking forward to the race this weekend. Anyways, let's look at some of the news. And, let's start with Nico Hülkenberg out of a drive at the end of the year at Renault, it being replaced by Esteban Ocon, who's moving over from the reserve driver at the Mercedes. French driver with a French team makes a lot of sense, but leaves the Hulk looking for work for 2020. And at the moment, it doesn't look like there's going to be many takers, and the options are starting to dwindle a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not Hülkenberg can stay in Formula One, find a seat by the year. Anyways, Carlos Sainz, the McLaren driver, he believes that Nico should stay in Formula One if it was just purely about speed and talent after the news dropped not so long ago that Hülkenberg was out of a job at Renault and has been snubbed by Haas, which we're going to talk about in a minute. I got a couple of things to say about that. Anyways, Sainz is Hülkenberg's ex-teammate from last year at Renault, and recognizes that he is on the risk of being forced out of Formula One. And Carlos Sainz said, and I quote, "I think everyone knows what Nico brings to the grid. I don't think I need to explain myself much. But as we know in Formula One, it's not always the talent or what you're capable of doing on the track that is predominant. There's a lot of things that can be taken into account other than your talent and how quick you are. If it was speed and talent, he should be on the F1 grid until whenever he wants." And that is true. I mean, Hülkenberg has, I think he's got well over 150 Grand Prix, probably several more than that, if not quite a bit more than that by now. Never has recorded a podium, and is just it's been unfortunate. I mean, this is a guy that won Le Mans just in the past couple of years. So, I mean, he's a talented driver, but it just hasn't really been able to put all the pieces together in Formula One. I have to admit, it was a bit of a surprise, but when you hear some of the more stories that came out that last year, it was Esteban Ocon that was the guy that was out of a job or out of a race seat once the musical chairs of the 2018 silly season ended. And I think we probably talked about it at the time, and I'm positive we did, that it was a shame because I thought that he'd acquitted himself pretty good in a year and change. at Force India alongside Sergio Perez. And I mean, there's a lot of controversy and incidents between those two. But I mean, the thing is, Esteban proved right up he could hold his, himself and acquit himself well in Formula One, and certainly looked like he deserved to stay there. But now it turns out that a lot of the reason why he didn't end up at Renault last year was the whole situation with Danny Ricciardo moving and signing a contract there. So that really threw a wrench into some of the work. So it's kind of ironic a year later that it kind of shakes out that he gets the drive there beside Ricciardo for 2020. And just a little bit sad if you're a fan of Nico Hülkenberg, that he's the guy that's left out looking from the outside in at the moment. And Hülkenberg does admit that it is a little bit frustrating that it is basically all out of his hands. He's referring to his Formula One future. And he says that he still has realistic chances of finding a seat on the grid for 2020. And, well, I mean, one of those opportunities dwindled or disappeared earlier this week when on Thursday Haas confirmed that Romain Grosjean is staying away, and that's taken away one of the remaining options that that Hülkenberg had. And Hülkenberg, he kind of played it down a little bit, saying he insisted that he knew the well advanced that that door closed and Grosjean was going to be staying there. So there are still some possibilities at Alfa Romeo. Antonio Giovinazzi is still to be confirmed to stay there for 2020 alongside Kimi Raikkonen. And well, I mean, Ferrari's kind of given him the tap on the shoulder and their support and their preference that that he stay there for 2020. Of course, that makes sense. An Italian driver like Antonio staying with an Italian team like Alfa Romeo, although they're based in Switzerland, because they used to be Haas, because they used to be Sauber. I know it's convoluted and confusing, but just purely from optics, Italian guy in an Italian car with an Italian engine. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sorry, a Ferrari engine, but still. And also the other seat that is yet is at Williams, which obviously is maybe not a great option, but it's an option nonetheless. And that comes after Thursday's announcement that Robert Kubica has announced that he will not stay with the team for 2020. So if Hülkenberg does end up back with Williams, then his F1 career will basically come full circle, because that's where he started when he broke into Formula One back in 2010. It's hard to believe that the guy's already been in Formula One for almost a decade. That's mind-blowing. Anyways, Hulk himself had to say, quote, "I think you see and understand for yourself what's available, which seats and which not. I think it's pretty obvious right now. It's to a big extent out of my control, out of my hands. We just need a bit more time, and I still think there are possibilities and realistic chances, and in this game you can never be too sure." Anyways, that is, well, we'll wait and see how that plays out. But just talking about Haas now, that was an option, well, at least it was until Thursday. But Gunther Steiner has explained what he called was a close call of going and sending an offer Nico Hülkenberg's way in favor of retaining Romain Grosjean for 2020. And, well, apparently he was on the radar at Haas to partner up with Kevin Magnussen in 2020, which that would have been interesting to say the least. I mean, these guys have a bit of a history on the track over the past couple of years. So to see them working together, racing alongside each other in the same team would have been interesting. I don't know if that had anything to do with Steiner's ultimate decision whether or not to keep or offer a contract to Hülkenberg in favor of retaining Romain Grosjean. I mean, we've seen Magnussen really race Grosjean pretty hard and pretty close over, well, especially this season. Let's go back to Spain a couple of months ago. There were some incidents there. I mean, Grosjean wasn't too happy about that. They had a coming together at Silverstone. I mean, these guys, they have a history with one another. But again, it would have been interesting, even though I think just in general, Grosjean and Magnussen get on pretty good together. It would have been an interesting, it definitely would have been a sit back and grab the popcorn kind of moment and watch potentially the fireworks unfold between Hülkenberg and Magnussen, considering the history that these two guys have together. But anyways, Steiner went on to say, quote, "It was a close call, you know, because they are both very good drivers, and I hope Nico stays in F1. I like him and he's a good driver, but in the end we decided to stay with Groma. He's with the team for 4 years. We know his highs and his lows. We know on a good day he's a very good driver. He knows the team very well. The biggest reason is our car this year is not performing where as we want it to perform, which in the end has nothing to do with the drivers we've got at the moment. It's the car, which we're very conscious about. And then Steiner goes on just to elaborate a little bit more. And he said that Roman is a big part of helping them understand what has gone wrong with the car in 2019, and he's a big help to sort out those problems. And they didn't want to have any more unknowns by introducing a new driver to the team, even if it's Nico Hülkenberg. I mean, Hülkenberg to me seems to be a pretty consistent driver, and Grosjean still has kind of his Madden moments and his issues, although we haven't had any the more headline-grabbing ones this season, let's put it that way. I think it's interesting that if there was an option to replace a guy like Roman Grosjean with Nico Hülkenberg, if I was Günther Steiner, I seriously would have sat back and really considered that very, very closely. Grosjean, I mean, he's been around F1 for a while, and let's admit it, I mean, he's had his moments, but I think if it was really going to happen for him, it would have happened by now. And honestly, I think he's had... Well, let's just put it this way. Let's just say that I admire Günther Steiner's loyalty to his drivers, because if it was it was me and some of the things that Grosjean has done, and just the inconsistency and some of the embarrassing things that that have happened with him in the team, I may not have been as forgiving and loyal as Günther Steiner if I saw an option and Nico Hülkenberg. I think I would have been a lot quicker to pull that trigger and send a contract Nico's way. But hey, again, I guess there's a reason why Günther Steiner is running a Formula One team, and I am sitting here doing a Formula One podcast. So there's a reason why people do what they do in the world. But anyways, just my two cents. Anyways, as I mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, Robert Kubica, the Polish driver, back in Formula One after many years away, 8 years away from the sport after that horrible accident he had rallying back in 2011, which almost cost him his arm, is announced that he will not return to Williams for 2020, and he's decided to part ways with the team at the end of the 2019 season. I mean, number one, I mean, it is a phenomenal achievement that Robert Kubica did to get back to that level of fitness and be able to race at the highest level. I mean, he hasn't been sitting around doing nothing for the past several years. I mean, he's been racing. He was able to test occasionally here and there. And just for him to be actually in the conversation as he was over the past year or so and actually landing a race drive again in Formula One, I know it's Williams, and they've had obviously some big issues with the team, with the car over the past couple of years. I mean, just for him to get a race seat in Formula One is impressive. So it is a little bit disappointing. It's sad to see him go, but it has not worked out well. I mean, he scored the only point that Williams has so far this season, but he really has been second best to his teammate George Russell. And he's been out-qualified by him each and every race. But still, I mean, when you have a guy like that, it's kind of like rooting for the underdog, you could say, to a certain extent. But I'm sad to see him go. And he's decided to leave the team in order to, what he says, to evaluate our opportunities for the future. So he's using the royal hour, I guess. I don't know what that means, but obviously he must be considering it from his own, his family's point of view, not just his own. But he does have to say, and I quote, "I always say it took a lot of energy, a lot of time for me to recover, to come back to the sport. Since I joined F1, I would like to stay. I said this year it would be a goal to remain in F1, but not for every cost. And I think I have to first of all do what will bring me back a bit of joy of racing. Of course, the season has been very tough from a performance point of view, but it's also been very demanding. Being back in Formula One after a long time is not easy, especially when you are in a difficult situation like we are. Nevertheless, I have to thank the team for the opportunity, and we will see what the future will bring." So it is, it's a bit sad to see that he's going, like I say, but if he's not enjoying it, if he's struggling, if the car's not there, if you know, just if his heart's not in it, maybe it is for the best that Robert Kubica moves on and tries something else for 2020. So anyways, obviously that is a seat that's going to be open for next year, and definitely I think that that Nico Hülkenberg will probably be thinking and looking at it very very carefully. The other option is that they could put a Nicholas Latifi into that seat, so we'll wait and see what happens. But at least from Williams' point of view, there is nowhere to go but up. And just to finish off on Kubica before the break here, he drew some praise from some of his peers, especially Lewis Hamilton, who really had some good things to say about Kubica's return to Formula One, and just all the hard work and just the feat that it was. So very impressive. Nice to hear Lewis weigh in on that. And just another note as well, just regarding Williams, they have extended their Mercedes engine deal to 2025. So interesting that that is one of the first official confirmations of anything that is happening post 2020, considering that the 2021 regulations still aren't sorted out, or at least not publicly released, or a deal has been made. But it's good to see that at least from an engine point of view, that they've obviously got one of the best, if not the very best, engines in Formula One, and now they just have to build a good car around it. Anyways, time for a very quick break here on Scuderia F1. Don't go away. We'll be back after this very short break. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network, coming to you once again from the Vivid Seats studio. Once again, my bookie show sponsor has a special going on for listeners of this show on the Overtime Media Network. So for any new users on mybookie.ag, double your initial deposit by using special promo code OVERTIME. All right, let's move along in the news here. And well, if you're Sebastian Vettel, if you know, you are struggling, and it's been well over years since Sebastian has won a race in Formula One, to get a vote of confidence from two guys like Toto Wolff and Ross Brawn to be in your corner, I think is something that really has to motivate you, maybe give you a little bit of extra confidence, maybe feel a little bit better about yourself, because it's been a tough year. I mean, problems that were his fault of the car, fault of the team, a lot of different things going on. But Sebastian again had a moment at the Italian Grand Prix at Monza the last week, in which he went off in the Ascari bend, came back on, unfortunately collected Lance Stroll in the process, was given a penalty for that, and ended up in, what was it, 13th or 14th position, while teammate and newcomer to the team Charles Leclerc goes on to claim victory in epic fashion. I mean, it was a great race to watch, but I think if you're Sebastian Vettel after that, you probably felt like crawling under a rock or going to hide somewhere very, very far away. But obviously, that's not going to help the issues that you have going on with your season, and well, basically your last season in a bit. It was just it wasn't fun to watch. I mean, I've been critical about the guy on the show over the last year or so, but at the end of the day, I mean, I don't want to see him struggle. I want to see everybody do well. I want to see straight up fighting on the track. I think that's what it comes down to. Personal loyalties aside, I mean, it doesn't really matter if you're a fan of Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, Kimi Raikkonen, Charles Leclerc, whoever it is. you want the guy that you're cheering for to do well. And ultimately, in a perfect world, all these guys would all be in good form. They'd all be driving cars that were of a similar quality and reliability and speed and handling and all those things. It'd be a fairly level playing field, and we'd be able to watch them scrap it out each and every race weekend, and that would be wonderful. I think that's why it made it so enjoyable watching Charles Leclerc and the Mercedes guys at Monza the other weekend. I mean, Lewis had a go at Charles for a long, long time, and even though Charles made some questionable choices in the way he decided to defend that decision, Lewis wasn't able to get around him before his tires went, and Bottas had a crack at him for a couple of laps right at the end. But you know what? I mean, take away just the some of the questionable stuff, and I still think it was kind of 50-50. It wasn't quite as blatant or as obvious as we'd seen Max Verstappen do over the years, but hey, that's a different conversation for a different day. But just in the fact that it was exciting. It was really, really exciting, in the fact that the Charles Leclerc did it without the benefit of his teammate to run interference and maybe block the two Mercedes drivers or make their task a little bit more difficult, I think just went to underline how important and how big that win actually was. But still, For Vettel, it must have been very, very difficult, to have that happen to him once again. And I still maintain, after really thinking about it, that it is the car that the lack of downforce that the Ferrari generates, and the fact that they don't often get the tires into that sweet spot, that optimum temperature range, just because of the lack of the downforce. And then, of course, in the corners, the lack of grip. I think a lot of the issues he's had this year, you look at Bahrain, Canada, and then again Monza, I think it just looks like a guy that isn't 100% comfortable with the equipment that he has. But certainly, I mean, he has been under fire. He's been really, I think, obviously he's got to be frustrated. I mean, especially look back at Montreal when he had that little twitch that sent him off of the track, and then he rejoined still in the lead and just ahead of Lewis Hamilton, and he was handed the penalty, which gave Lewis the race victory, and Sebastian was so ticked off afterwards. He went and back into the Parc Fermé and went and moved the signs around, put the one, for the first place finish back in front of his car instead of Lewis's. So, I mean, he was ticked off and rightly slow. So you can completely understand why he would be, he would be unhappy about that. But still, I mean, it has been very, very difficult for it. And Toto Wolff said that despite the problems that he's had, and I quote, "I'm just saying, don't write him off. He's a four-time world champion, and the difference between the great ones and the good ones is that the great ones are able to get back up again, and I have no doubt he can do that. He's had a spell of bad races, and now it'll be about the ability to get himself back into where he deserves to be, and for sure it is a bad day for him." He's referring to the Italian Grand Prix. And Ross Brawn basically echoes those sentiments, and he says, and I quote, "Vettel is clearly one of the greats of our sport, but at this tough time, he really needs the support of his team to regain the confidence he seems to be lacking at the moment. That, as well as pushing on with the car development, has to be a priority for Team Boss Mattia Binotto for the coming weeks. It won't be easy, but essential, especially in terms of 2020. And, I mean, truer words have never been spoken. I mean, they really need to get it right. I mean, that's Ferrari. And that is, get the design of the car and really make up for some lost opportunities. I mean, they really had a legit shot to win it last year. Vettel had a legit shot to be a world champion again last year. And I mean, it would have been a completely different tone to this year, for obvious reasons, if he was the five-time world champion instead of Lewis Hamilton. I mean, history, of course, is completely different, but still maintain that that if you're Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel, you're looking at 2018 as a season that slipped through your fingers and got away. So Vettel says, and I'm going to use the phrase that he used, he's still lacking what he calls absolute trust in the 2019 SF90. And despite Charles Leclerc having won the last two races at Spa and Monza, it's just not working for him. And Juan Pablo Montoya, a former Formula One race winner and a driver, he said last week, defending Vettel, that is, and saying that the latest error that cost him some dignity and obviously points and a shot at a victory at Monza, He said it's not a sign of mental weakness. JPM said, I don't think it's mental. It's not that I'm in the wrong place mentally. Pardon me, that's Vettel, when he was reading about Juan Pablo's comments. And Seb goes on to say, I think I'm doing the right thing. So that's why I think it's crucial not to overcomplicate things too much and pull through it. Yes, here and there, I might not have absolute trust in the car and not the best feeling yet. But I think it's improving the understanding of the car. Then it's a question of details, lining them up, and I'm convinced that hopefully sooner than later it will click and things will start to fall in place. Until then, I think we need to keep our head down. So that's true. I think a lot of the things, I think it really is sort of manifest that this isn't a guy that really feels that that he can push the car completely to the limit, right to the limits of the performance envelope, whereas Charles Leclerc is obviously had a little bit more success with that. I mean, he probably, in place of winning two races over the past several weeks, he probably could have had at least one, perhaps not two more race wins this year. So it is what it is. And I completely agree with what Ross Brawn was saying, is that 2020 has to be completely a big focus for them. And they really need to get that car sorted out, get the design sorted for next year, because it's going to be another situation that you just can't let another season go like that. I mean, they were on the ascendancy over the past couple of years, and then abruptly about this year, the wheels, no pun intended, started to fall off for different reasons. And I really hope that they can get it turned around. I mean, with some of the racing that we've seen this year, either between the Red Bulls and the Ferraris, or Ferraris and Mercedes, or Red Bull and Mercedes, I think it would be great if we could see more of that more often. But it certainly is very interesting to see how Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel have differing sort of luck, if you want to call it that, or fortunes with basically the same machinery. But Charles instead, as he's focusing on the negatives despite the wins. And I mean, he's had a pretty abbreviated career so far. I mean, he's only in his early 20s. I mean, this is his second full season in Formula One. I mean, last year he was with Sauber Alfa Romeo and getting promoted to Ferrari. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on the guy. I mean, he's done really, really well in his first year with Ferrari. I mean, he's done very, very well in general just in Formula One, just in the space of a year and a half now. Anyways, ahead of the Singapore Grand Prix this weekend, Charles said, I always focus on the negatives. Even after a win, even after a weekend that looked perfect from the outside, there's always something you can improve, and especially in myself at only 21 years old, I have a lot to improve still. So I always focus on the negative, try to understand that, and try and work on that for the race after. So I think that's a good little window into the mentality of Charles Leclerc, because I think a lot of it has to be in the details. I mean, let's face it, all of these guys, even the guys that secretly, or maybe not so secretly, we criticize for maybe they're a little bit fortunate to be in Formula One. In general, these are all very, very good drivers. Excuse me, obviously some of them are better. I mean, the likes of Lewis Hamilton. I mean, Lewis stands out apart from everyone else. I mean, but I mean, you got Max Verstappen, you got Sebastian Vettel, Valtteri Bottas is no slouch. I mean, there are so many good drivers in there. So to hear Charles talking about that it's the negatives of things that he could have improved on, where he could have found better performance, what he could have done to make his race not just be really good, but be absolutely outstanding or perfect, I think is really fascinating. Just his focus on the details of what needs to be done, because I think if you focus on the details, the bigger, larger picture will take care of itself. And I guess it's like that saying: sometimes you win and sometimes you learn. So, you know, there's no such thing as well, I guess losing isn't fun, but certainly if things don't go the way that you're expecting, and it doesn't have to be purely in Formula One, of course, that if things don't work out, there is a good opportunity to take back or take a step back afterwards and look and focus and see exactly what went wrong and what can be improved upon for the future. But anyways, talking about focusing on the details, Ferrari has unveiled a new nose cone design for Singapore. So this is in their ongoing quest to chase the low speed performance and find more grip, as they want to continue this streak of wins that they've had in Formula One. It really looked like, for basically up until the summer break, that it wasn't going to happen for Ferrari this year. It just it seemed that this might be a year that would be completely winless for them. And then, well, we had Spa, we had Italy, and all of a sudden things seem completely different. But, you know, I mean, those were two circuits where there's some very long straight sections, and the straight line speed of the Ferrari was always going to be an advantage. And certainly, I think that Charles Leclerc did an outstanding job when he needed to really use that to his full advantage, and that helped him basically win two races. It looked like it was going to be very, very dodgy, but it looked like he may not be able to fend off Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas and all his rivals there in those couple of races, but he did what he needed to do, and he hung on, and he's got a pair of wins to his name, and I think that's really impressive. So but now we go into some tracks where maybe that straight line speed isn't going to be as apparent and as advantageous as it was at Spa or at Italy. So are they going to find a solution to the problems that they have for the lack of grip and the lack of downforce and the lack of performance of these cars going through the slower sections of the track or through the corners? That remains to be seen. But there's only so much that they can do. And obviously there's more than a handful of races left in the season at this point. But at least Ferrari, you know, they are looking at options at what they can still do to improve the car that they have right now, rather than just saying, oh, you know, to hell with it. We're not doing any more development, no matter how big or small, between now and the end of the year. We're just focusing completely on 2020. And Mattia Bonato, team principal, did say earlier this week that that he still believes that there is some performance and still some race wins that they can go and target for the remainder of the season. So, you know, we'll wait and see. I have to think that my feeling was that Spa and Monza were going to be their two best opportunities to win the season. Whether or not they've done enough to win or develop the car, solve some of the issues that they have with it, and the downforce and lack of grip, whether or not that's been solved, we'll find out this weekend. It might be a good indication, but unless proven otherwise, I really don't know if they'll be able to find another situation where they can win like they did over the past couple of weekends. But I think if they did, it certainly would make things interesting. I mean, they're not going to challenge for the constructors. Vettel or Charles Leclerc aren't going to catch Lewis Hamilton in the Drivers' Championship, but still, it would be fun to watch and see a bit of a momentum shift and see Ferrari get a little bit of their mojo back, especially down the stretch of the season here, and maybe get at least some positive momentum going out from this year and into 2020. Anyways, time for another quick break here on Scuderia F1. Don't go away. We'll be back after this very short message from our show sponsors. Don't go away. We'll be right back. All right, well, welcome back to the show. So let's talk about some other things right now. And Honda has said that they admit that the freak power cut that Max Verstappen suffered during qualifying during the Italian Grand Prix could happen again. And basically what they were saying was that the Honda engine went into a certain special protection mode that activated after Verstappen went over a curb, and something that this protection mode activated after the curb strike. And according to motorsport.com, the FIA is looking into it as a system that is perhaps a kind of a power aid or driver aid. And basically what they're saying is that they don't believe, or they're implying, that Red Bull or Honda have a form of traction control. But this protection mode that is in the engine that reduces torque when the driver suffers too much wheel spin partially replicates the phenomenon of traction control and a driver aid. So it's interesting to see what is going to happen for that. I mean, traction control has been banned in Formula One since 2008. I mean, I've got it in my car, and it's great, especially during the winter and it's icy and snowy and stuff like that. But the technical regs in Formula One state that no car could be equipped with a system or device which is capable of preventing the wheels from spinning under power or compensating for excessive torque demand by the driver. So it is the first time that system activated, apparently, and so we'll see what happens. And it's interesting that I didn't think that these things were around, and obviously then they don't come to light very often. They're discussed very often, but there's a lot that goes into a Formula One car, and I guess even though everything that that gets monitored in Formula One and all these cars, there's always something different that can get sort of sneak through it, and I guess it must have been one hell of a curb strike that if it produced that much wheel spin for the you know that that protection mode to activate in order to you know protect the engine and you know not over torque itself. Anyways, moving on to McLaren now, they said that they are not going to compromise their shot at 2020 to save fourth place in the Constructors Championship this year, and I think that's a good stance to have. I think for me, honestly, what McLaren has done this year has been great. Obviously, they haven't got any podiums or race wins, but for the first time in quite a good number of years, it's been positive momentum for McLaren, positive forward momentum. And I was skeptical before the beginning of the year when I saw that they were going to have a lineup of Danny Kvyat, pardon me, Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris for 2019. Honestly, I've thought that the Carlos Sainz was maybe a little bit of an unproven quantity in Formula One. I thought he was an okay kind of driver, but I mean, they've done a good job. And Lando Norris, a highly touted rookie, young driver that that hadn't been in Formula One. I mean, Zach Brown was approached last year whether or not he could go on loan. That's Lando Norris could be loaned to Toro Rosso for last year, and then at last half of last year and then the entirety of this season, and then Zach Brown basically said no, and you can see why. I mean, they've done a very, very good job over the course of this year, and if they need to focus on 2020 to make more steps forward, I think that's a very smart decision. They've demonstrated, at least in my eyes, that things are finally going in the right direction and that they're doing what they need to do. They've got the right people in place. They've got a pair of good drivers. Norris has really outperformed and really exceeded my expectations. So I can see now exactly why Zach Brown was so keen to hang on to this guy and make sure that that he wasn't going to leave McLaren. Or you know, even if it was on a temporary basis for a team like Toro Rosso, I completely understand it now, and I would like to see them consolidate and solidify that that fourth place in the constructors. But if that means that they need to refocus and watch what's going on with the development of last year, and you know, make sure that they don't lose sight on their goals and their development for that car, I think I'm okay with that. I mean, I've seen enough forward momentum and enough progress this year that if it doesn't work out for them and there's some expense that that they need to pay because of that, I'm honestly, guys, I'm completely okay with that. I'm fine with that. And it's good to see, because I mean, it's been painful over the past several years. I mean, especially in the Alonso era before this year. Well, I mean, last year there were some signs here and there, but not big concrete gains like we've seen over the season thus far. But you know, it was painful, especially you know, I guess going back to 2016, 2017. I mean, when Honda's coming back in, the engine was unreliable. It had no power. I mean, couple that with a car that you know, despite what they're saying publicly, was not as good as they wanted everybody to believe. Perhaps they believed it themselves that that was much better than they thought. It was just not fun to watch. I mean, I grew up in an era watching Alain Prost and Ayrton Senna, and then after that, we had you know, the likes of Mika Häkkinen, and then Kimi Räikkönen. I mean, so many great drivers. I mean, Jenson Button. I mean, just so many good drivers have driven for McLaren over the years, and just the way that they dropped over the edge and into the abyss over the past several years was just you know, too painful to watch. Okay, and moving along now, let's talk about 2020, and Pirelli apparently has been using some new top-secret testing procedure on their 2020 Formula One tires, and this is as a result of the concerns that were voiced by a number of teams earlier this year that the 2019 tires have too small of an operating window, and Pirelli has tried to, they've agreed to try and expand that window for next year, so the development of the tire rubber that they're going to use for next year is very, very well advanced at this point. But one of the big issues for them is to find a way to test these compounds that it wants to use that that hopefully will work over a wider variety of temperatures. So Pirelli's head of car racing, Mario Isola, has revealed that the techniques that they've developed for indoor testing have helped them hit the targets that they needed to. And he said, I quote, what we are doing for next season is to redesign the construction in order to modify the footprint, and that is mainly to reduce overheating. And to design new compounds with new ingredients, we're exploring new directions in order to have a wider working range. We've been working with some indoor tests to understand how to identify and measure the working range properly, because the working range is affected by a lot of different elements. So hopefully that gets sorted out. I mean, the problem with the temperature and the difficulty that a lot of the teams are having just getting the tires into that optimal operating or sweet spot for the optimum operating temperature. It just has been a real struggle. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of teams, excuse me, saying that that they wanted to dial things back and go back to the tire rubber that they'd used from a previous season. So hopefully they can get it done with that. You know, honestly, I don't really like these high degradation tires. It just seems to be a bit of a waste. I mean, if they could keep them, lasting longer, then that would be a little bit better. I mean, I know that that it all leads to adds part of it to Formula One, but tires that only last about 10 or 15 laps seems a little bit, wasteful and just a little bit silly. Anyways, let's talk a little bit now about the USA, and Miami is back in the news this week with news that a stadium-based race and the plans that they have for that is facing a lot of local opposition. So it is became like a potential location for a Grand Prix in Miami after plans to use the Port and Bayfront Park areas hit a lot of bumps along the way. So the Miami Dolphins, the less said about the Dolphins, the better, I'm sure, for fans of the Dolphins can probably agree. The stadium area is where the Dolphins do play, and their owner Stephen Ross is also the promoter of the race. So it is interesting because my other podcast focuses on Major League Soccer, and that started way back in 2013, and almost right off of the bat, we'd been talking about a potential MLS team going into Miami, and it only really became a thing about about a year ago now. So I mean, it was a good 5 years at least talking about it intermittently on my other podcast, about all the snags and the opposition and the different plans that they had to build a stadium down there for the MLS team. And just I should say I'm surprised, but not really too surprised that there is some local opposition to get this thing off of the ground. I mean that's not to be critical of the people that live there. I mean, I'm not just saying that they should just turn a blind eye and put up with all the inconveniences and all the negative things that come along with that. I mean, far be it. I'm not going to say that at all. I mean, it's got to work for everybody, or else it's not going to work for anyone, right? So, the point is that I wasn't surprised too much that it didn't go off snag free, just based on the history and the problems that David Beckham and his ownership group had trying to get a stadium or land for stadium secured for their team there. So, we'll see how that works out, but it seems that just every once in a while you think it's going to be dead, but then it sort of comes back to life again, and still no official word on whether or not that's going to actually get off of the ground, because I thought the original idea was to get that race up and running for either this year or next year, and here we are in the latter third of the 2019 Formula One World Championship, and the Miami Grand Prix, or potential one, still very much up in the air. Anyways, before we go and talk about the Singapore Grand Prix in a little bit more detail, news now that Formula One Stirling Moss is slowly but surely making progress in his return to health, according to his wife, as the Formula One and the racing legend turned 90 years old. So he retired from public life in 2018 in order to focus on his health and spend more time with his family. And Moss, ironically, had fallen ill while traveling in Singapore in 2016 with a very severe chest infection, and his wife Susie told British newspaper The Daily Mail that Sterling is a fighter. He's making progress, but is going slower than we would like. Anyways, we hope that Sir Sterling gets back to full health sooner rather than later. And anyways, we're going to take one final break on the show here, and we're going to come back in just a few moments to talk about the Singapore Grand Prix that's coming up in literally just a couple of hours is when the first practice sessions get underway. Anyways, you're listening to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1, coming to you once again from the Vivid Seats studio. Mark Daly here, breaking things down and bringing you all up to date with all the latest news and goings on in the world of Formula One. So yes, it is the Singapore Grand Prix at Marina Bay this weekend. And as I sit here in the studio, we are literally just 3 hours away at this very moment at 10:30 p.m. on a Thursday night here on the west coast of Canada. So 3 hours until FP1 gets underway. Obviously, by the time the show goes out to download, it will come and gone and pass. But anyways, good to get back to racing. And before we talk about the race itself, let's just go back and refresh our memories, because I don't remember the standings off the top of my head. It's been almost 2 weeks. Anyways, on the constructor side, Mercedes way out in front, over 150 points ahead of Ferrari and the constructors at the moment. Mercedes 505 points, Ferrari second with 351, Red Bull with 266, McLaren 83 for fourth in the world championship, and Renault slowly clawing their way back into the fight with 65 points to round out to the top five. On the driver's side of the world championship, it's still Lewis Hamilton, and has been for a very, very long time. Lewis 284 points, good for first place in the world championship. He's well ahead of his teammate Valtteri Bottas, who was second with 221. Max Verstappen third with 185. Charles Leclerc now well ahead of his teammate Sebastian Vettel, and Charles has 182 points, and Sebastian rounding out the top five in the Drivers' Championship with 169 points. So what will we see this weekend? Well, good question. Let's talk about that a little bit more. Now a little bit of background about the track at Marina Bay. It is a 5.06 kilometer long circuit. The race distance is 308.7 kilometers. There are 61 laps. The tires that have been selected for this week, the hard, medium, and softs. It's the C3 hard, C4 mediums, and the soft C5s. And Kevin Magnussen in the Haas holds a lap record, and that was set in 2018, and K-Mag setting a time of 1:41.905. So definitely a longer lap compared to some of the other ones we see. And there are a lot of very tight, very extreme angles in this track, a lot of corners that are 90 degrees or maybe even a little bit more. It is tight, it is twisty, it is narrow, it is dark, it is hot, it is humid, it is muggy. It's a lot of unpleasant things if you're in the cockpit of a Formula One car, but it should be an enjoyable one to watch. So let's just go back last year and refresh our minds. In qualifying, it was number 44, Lewis Hamilton, capturing pole position alongside Max Verstappen. We saw a second row of Sebastian Vettel and Valtteri Bottas. Third row was Kimi Raikkonen in the second Ferrari, lining up in front of Danny Ricciardo in the second Red Bull. Row four was Sergio Perez in the Force India and Romain Grosjean. And row five was Esteban Ocon in the second Force India, or the Racing Point as it probably was at that point in the season, and then Nico Hülkenberg in the first of the two Renaults. And after by the time it was all said and done, it was Lewis Hamilton winning the race with a time of 1 hour, 51 minutes, and 11 seconds. So, you know, this is one, if we see some safety cars or the weather is bad or any combination thereof, we could come up against that 2 hour hard time limit. I mean, just under normal conditions, I mean, we had just under 2 hours last year. So certainly a very long race. Anyways, Lewis coming home ahead of Max Verstappen. He was 8.9 seconds behind. And Sebastian Vettel, an afterthought, in third position at 39, almost 40 seconds further down the road. Fourth and fifth were a pair of Finns. Valtteri Bottas was fourth, and then Kimi Raikkonen in the second Ferrari, rounding out the top five. So by the time it was all said and done, in the World Championship this time last year after Singapore. Lewis Hamilton was 40 points ahead of Sebastian Vettel. Lewis leaving Singapore with 281 points, compared to 241 for Sebastian Vettel. And on the constructor side, it was still fairly close between Mercedes and Ferrari a year ago. The Silver Arrows ended up with 452 points, and that was compared to 415 for Ferrari. So, I mean, if you look just what the difference is just in the constructors compared to this time last year, is just it's massive. It really is. I mean, it just really goes to show you. I mean, we've seen some exciting races, and we've seen other guys win. I mean, look at you know, Max winning a couple of races here and there, and Charles winning a couple of races. I mean, we do forget it. Just well, at least I do. I can only speak for myself, of course, but just how dominant that Mercedes has been this year. I mean, they're just literally blowing everybody else out of the water. So, would be nice to see you know, the sustained challenge from Ferrari and perhaps Red Bull as we head down the stretch here in the season. But it really does remain to be seen how that's going to shake out. But really was, I think, an interesting, well, I guess it's kind of predictable too, but I mean, I think it really kind of shows how that even last year at the end of the year, even with the Renault engine, that Ferrari and Red Bull had kind of, I think the signs were there that they were sort of swapping places in terms of, you know, being rivals to Mercedes. I mean, Max, I mean, only 9 seconds behind Lewis Hamilton. I mean, Sebastian Vettel almost 40 seconds further down the road. I mean, that's pretty much half a lap, and that's just a lot. That's just a huge, huge, huge gap. And we've seen a couple times this year how, you know, the same thing. I mean, look at Hungary. I mean, Max and Lewis, they were pretty close for a very long time. I know we had pit stops at the end there, but Sebastian Vettel, I mean, he played it well. I mean, give him credit and Ferrari credit. I mean, he went for, you know, the two-stop strategy, which in the end you know, worked out to his benefit, and he was able to pass his teammate Leclerc, who was struggling on you know, tires that were fading. You know, he went for the hard tires, and you know, decided only to one stop, and it was kind of simple for Sebastian to get get around Charles without too many problems. But it certainly does you know, just remind us of the gap even in that race of how far Ferrari was behind. I mean, this year the Red Bull has really surprised me just at the difference there, or maybe not the difference so much, but certainly how the Honda power has really, I think, surprised me and delivered a lot more than I was expecting, especially so soon. I know that they said for a very long time that that they wanted to at least give them something comparable to the Renault power that they've had for many, many years, or at least you know, keep them on the same level that they were with Renault last year. And they've exceeded my expectations, but honestly, it really is difficult to predict anybody other than Mercedes winning this race. I know we've seen in more recent times, we've seen some different winners, but it is just one of these things. I mean, they have been so dominant, they've been so good this year that when things go well for them, that's just that there is no competition. And I know that they were beat fair and square on the track in Spa and at Monza over the past couple of races, but I mean, that really does come down to the fact that there were faster, straighter sections that really just played into Ferrari's hand. And I know that if the Belgian Grand Prix maybe goes 4 or 5 laps longer, maybe not even that Lewis Hamilton probably would have caught up and passed Charles Leclerc. I mean, it was very, very close at the end. And just that little bit of interference that Sebastian Vettel played in that supporting role in that race, just doing a little bit. I mean, he wasn't you know, really going out of his way to block or slow down Lewis Hamilton, but the little bit of interference that he was able to provide, I think ultimately did fall into the lap of Charles Leclerc, and just gave him that little bit of a buffer that he needed, a little bit of insurance. And at the end of the day, that second or two was all that he really needed to hang on. But if that race goes a couple of laps longer, completely different story. But even at Monza there 2 weeks ago, again, the Ferrari, the straight line speed, and the fact that that Monza is still pretty much flat out. I mean, there are a handful of chicanes and corners through there that slow them down A little, but not much. It really is a flat out, and that was always going to be, I think, an advantage for Ferrari. I mean, certainly when you see like the in-car cameras when they come out of parabolic and going down that long start-finish straight, just how Charles would just completely pull away from the Mercedes cars. And, you know, God bless, Crofty and Martin Brundle on the Sky Sports that we get here in Canada. And, you know, I know they have to hype it up, but you could just tell, even though they say, oh, here comes Lewis Hamilton, or here comes Valtteri Bottas. You just look at the gap between us. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Even if they try some Danny Ricciardo type late braking into the first corner of Redafilio, that it just wasn't quite close enough. I mean, even under braking, they were able to close the gap a little bit. But just that little bit of advantage that the Ferrari had in the straight line was enough to really make the difference and just kind of keep them not quite at arm's length, but just enough that that it would be just barring some sort of mistake from Charles Leclerc that they would not be able to pass him by the time they got to turn one. But, you know, I just kind of keep looking at the remaining races on the season, you know, and the rest of the season. And who knows, maybe that Ferrari or Red Bull can find, something that they can win some races here and there. But at some point, I mean, Mercedes is never going to ease off. They go out there to win each and every race, each and every weekend. And I think that after a while, that if they go through a bit of a dry spell, that's just going to make them even more motivated to take care of business and get things done. So I'm going to go with a Mercedes win this weekend. I think Charles Leclerc gets on the podium, and I think that's how it's going to be. I think it's going to be Lewis Hamilton, Charles Leclerc, and Valtteri Bottas. But who knows? I mean, it is a track that has seen its fair share of drama over the years. So attrition, accidents, all sorts of things can happen, and quite possibly they will. But that's my pick for the podium at Singapore this weekend. So we'll wait and see in a couple of days how that turns out. And I'm probably calling it all wrong. I mean, whenever I kind of make these sort of predictions, just sort of off the cuff, and usually I get it right. But anytime I come out and boldly make a statement like that, I usually get it completely wrong. So, I mean, it's probably going to be a podium now of Max Verstappen, Sebastian Vettel, and let's put Danny Ricciardo up there. Why not, right? Anyways, we'll see. Perhaps one of my bizarre predictions will come true, and we can talk about it next week. Anyways, I'm going to wrap it up there, and thank you all very much for downloading and listening to the show. Thank you for the support. The reviews and ratings that you leave on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else does make a difference, and again, the show continues to grow each and every month. And I thank you all for your support each and every week. It really does make it all worthwhile and fun to do. Anyways, if you want to get in touch, if you've got anything you want to add to the conversation, if you have any comments or feedback, please do so. Easiest way to send me an email at scuderiaf1@gmail.com or on the Twitters at scuderiaf1pod. And that's it. That's a wrap. That's all we've got from the studio this week. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the Singapore Grand Prix, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to scuderiaf1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com.